Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 138 of Getting It Out Podcast. That was Howling Giant with their cover of Alice in Chains' Rooster, and I think it's fucking fantastic. Yes, that is the second time in probably a month that I've opened up the podcast with an Alice in Chains cover. Also, might I add, the second time that I've done that with a band who is also a past guest on Getting It Out Podcast. Tom and Zach of A Howling Giant were once on an episode here, and they were wonderful gentlemen, and I gladly have them back anytime, especially if they keep putting out stuff like this. They also did a really cool split recently. It was just like a one-song split, but it was it's like a full LP, basically, what was the other band? Thunderhoof? Something like that? I forget what it's called exactly, but the point is that Howling Giant is consistently releasing awesome music, and this cover of Alice in Chains' Rooster is no exception to that. It's coming out on this comp that they call it Dirt Redo. Dirt Redux? I don't know how you're supposed to say that word. It's probably Redo. It's coming out on Magnetic Eye Records. The lineup for it is pretty awesome. It's Thou, Low Flying Hawks, High Priest, Chemist, who you heard I did their Down in a Hole on a past episode. There's Howling Giant. There's Backwoods Payback. There's 16. Lots of awesome bands. I haven't heard them all. I've only heard two of these tracks so far, but so far they're pretty fucking cool, right? And this label does a lot of these cool tribute records. I see a couple for Black Sabbath. I see a couple for Pink Floyd. I need to get into all of them. I need them to just send me all of them. How about that? That's a way better option, because otherwise this is going to get a little pricey. But these are cool records. I just want to make sure you're checking them out. If you do, in fact, love Alice in Chains, there's no way you're not going to like this. So far, I've been very impressed. Anyway, moving on to what's happening on this episode. This episode, I have the Kohler brothers from Sick of It All. Yes, Pete and Lou Kohler. They put out a new book recently called The Blood and the Sweat, the story of something about the Sick of It All brothers, right? they did it with Howie Abrams, and we're talking about that in this episode. So rather than me go on and on and on, let's just get into it. Okay, here we are, episode 138. 138. What's that? We are 138. Remember when that guy used to sing that song instead of singing shitty Elvis songs? Anyway, I don't mean to be a jerk. Sorry, it's just natural. This episode is pretty exciting to me because it's with one of my favorite hardcore bands of all time. And legitimately one of my favorite hardcore bands of all time. Number one goes to Wisdom and Chains, of course. Number two, probably Agnostic Front. Number three, it might be Sick of It All. I don't. It's debatable, but it's hard to argue against that. It's probably Sick of It All. So it was awesome to have the opportunity to speak to both Pete and Lou after reading their book, The Blood and the Sweat, which as I mentioned, they did with Howie Abrams, and it's out there now. You need to go check it out. Several reasons. You probably, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably like Sick of It All already. And if you don't, you probably should, definitely should. And if you consider yourself a fan of hardcore at all, then we shouldn't be having this conversation, quite frankly. We should be well past this point. Anyway. They are without question the most consistent band in the genre's history, and I can't think of anything they've done that I don't like. And this book is included in that list. Books by people in the hardcore genre can be kind of tough sometimes because it's a lot of tough guy shit, and we get enough of that out of your lyrics. We don't need it in the book. Or you just get some elitist nonsense like that fucking that whole thing. Look, you remember that American Hardcore book? Don't get me wrong, I have literally read that book probably three times, front cover to back cover. But it's so fucking elitist. You can't try to read a Henry Rollins book. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, not to entirely change subjects, but I'm looking across the room right now and I see a storage bin. It's got a shuttlecock in it. I don't know the last time anybody in this house ever played badminton, but somebody has because there's a shuttlecock in the spin that's sitting across the room from me. It's pretty incredible. The birdie, right? Some people call it a birdie. I'm going to call it what it actually is. It's called a shuttlecock, right? That's what they call it in badminton. Badminton. I got to say it correctly. Can you believe that's an Olympic sport? But then I think they got rid of wrestling? Isn't wrestling like the ultimate Olympic sport? Boy, did we take a weird turn quickly on this podcast. Let's blame the Greeks. How about that? I lived in Greektown in Baltimore for a long time, and they always had a sweaty brow. That's all I can really say for sure. I'm not sure what they were up to. Maybe they legitimately had a sweaty brow. Maybe there's a reason to have a sweaty brow, but they always had one. And they were very suspicious people, but I liked them. I liked them for some weird reason. They were very loud and not necessarily jovial. They're kind of angry, but you know, whatever. Greektown. Go live in Greektown, Baltimore. I think they try to say it's a very gay neighborhood. I don't remember it that way though. I remember a lot of women who wore pajamas day, you know, night and day, all day long, just out in the streets in their pajamas. Not, you know, like, and I'm talking like sweatpants and hoodies. You know, and you can't go outside in sweatpants unless you're buying heroin. That's like a prerequisite. You can go buy heroin in sweatpants, but you can't go outside in sweatpants for any other reason unless you're going to work out. It's like two opposite ends of the spectrum. Anyway, no sweatpants in public, please, unless you're going to your drug dealer. But whatever. I think I've probably gone on too much, and I might have offended some people, and for that I should apologize. So let's just go into this conversation with Pete and Lou. Again, it was a total honor to do it. And let's start with the classic Sick of It All track. And if you know it, you know it. If you don't, you should. Either way, here it is.
Oh, yeah, sure, I know. It's a free country, and I ain't got the right. But I got a badge. What do you got?
So again, thank you guys for doing this. I'm before we really get into it, I myself am a huge Sick of It All fan. I've loved you guys since. See, you're one of the bands that I found back before I even, you know, knew what hardcore was. It was just heavy music. It was punk rock. It was metal. It was something in between. And so I've been listening to you for literally, well, more than half my life at this point. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm very stoked to be doing this. And I was already excited seeing that you guys released this book, and I got it and I burned through it, and I'm not kidding, it less than 2 days. It was just, you know, right on my screen. I just read it on the computer and just flew right through it. And I've seen the same from a lot of people that I know who've been involved in hardcore, particularly for a long time, have been flying through it as well, and I've heard only good things. So anyway, that's just me blowing you up, telling you, stoked to do this conversation, glad to have you. So obviously, I want to talk to you about all that, but I'm not going to keep you too long. But yeah, I want to get into this. So I mean, you and I both know, and the people that listen to this are all going to know who Sick of It All is. They're all going to know the basic Sick of It All stuff. And but what they're not going to know, and what I'm interested in, is how did Sick of It All, how did you two in particular decide that it was time to write a book?
Wow.
Actually,
it was Howie Abrams. It was his idea to do, because me and Lou, and we always wanted to do like a history of Sick of It All or a Sick of It All book. But then Howie had the idea of it being a little more interesting with doing the whole brother angle.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it stood out from the rest of them. And I know, like you said, it says in the book there, but what I enjoyed about it was the way that this whole thing read just like somebody was sitting there listening to you guys talk. Is that how it was written?
It was we did a couple of face-to-face meetings with Howie, and we just started. It was good to have him there, because it's like when we hang out, you know, backstage, or we're hanging out somewhere and we just start talking about stuff. Somebody will bring something up that will remind us, and we can start telling the stories. And that's why it was good to have Howie. He would prompt us with different things that he had heard, or he was there and he's like, do you remember when this happened? Or, all right, at this year, you put this album out. Do you remember what happened around that album or that tour? So it was really good to have that, you know? And I like that about the book. Like you said, it's just like hanging out at a bar, listening to the guys swap stories, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I know it goes through in the book, but how did you first link up with Howie to begin with?
He was just we'd see each other heading to CBGB's matinees. You know, he's another guy from Queens. And then we all started seeing each other at the matinees. And we just got to know him through that, you know, through hardcore, through all the thrash metal shows that we'd all run into each other at, you know. It was funny because we were all at a lot of the same shows that are like legend now. Like we saw Venom's first shows in New York in America. And it was like Venom with Metallica opening. And Howie was there. We were there, you know.
So we've known him even longer than the band's been together, you know?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah.
Long, long time.
And then he got him and Steve Martin started a subsidiary of Relativity Records called In Effect for bands like Agnostic Front, Sick of It All, whatever. And that's when, you know, he got involved with us even more.
Well, and he's one that it seems like has stuck around, too, much like you guys, much like Sick of It All. He's still been involved, and I guess maybe his main involvement now is in writing these books, right? I think he's done a couple of them.
Yeah, that's like his thing now, I guess.
No, it's a cool way to take it with all the history he knows.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's been in the music, not just hardcore. That's the one thing I love about him is that he branches out. He loves hip hop. He loves, you know, all that underground metal, but he also loves, you know, he does mainstream shit too. Like he did a publishing company and works for a publishing company. He did mainstream bands like Bowling for Soup and stuff like that, you know?
Right, right.
But he never, ever stopped going to hardcore shows, which is something that's very rare, you know?
It is. And, you know, all right, so I'm only 35, but I got two kids and a wife and a house and all that. I don't know how all of you guys are able to keep this up. It's amazing to me. Like, it's impressive to be able to do it all, to continue to do it and be as involved. Yeah. When you were doing this, these meetups with him or whatever, how long did this process take to get this book figured out?
It was not done like constantly. It was what we would do like a couple of weeks and then stop for a little while and do like a couple of weeks more, where we'd have I think there were like two or three face to face. The rest were done with long conference calls, and because we'd be laughing and just, you know, telling the stories and going off on it. He would bring up a subject and then we would start that subject, but then take it off into the left field, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say almost a year just because of the spacing it out.
And I think that's why it actually came out sounded like just guys talking, because it was just us telling stories and, you know, joking around and stuff. And it brought back so much memories, and it was, like, fun to do it.
Yeah. The encouraging thing was when Howie, like, I guess after the first month or so, he goes, I can't remember the woman's name right now, but the woman who was transcribing the book,
yeah,
she said she has to keep stopping because she's laughing so much. So I thought that was very encouraging, you know. Because personally, when Howie brought up this thing about a book, I was just like, who the hell wants to read about us, you know? And not just the band, but his brothers. It's like, what's the big deal? It's just, my mentality is we just do it. You just got to get in and do it, you know? But it's just, I'm glad, because I was really nervous about how people would accept it, or, you know, it's not a story of like, a lot of the hardcore guys had hard lives growing up, and I'm not saying our lives are cakewalk, you know, but
right.
they either placed themselves in situations that were really bad, or they just came from bad situations, you know?
Yeah, well,
we have some fights about that.
Yeah, a couple. Well, I think you hit on two really important things there, but why this book and you guys and this band in particular resonates so well with people. One being that, all right, maybe it's not a big deal to you guys that you're brothers, but all right, I got a brother. We don't get along like you guys seem to get along, at least. I couldn't work with my brother for 30 years. I can barely work with him for 4 hours, you know? And you know, like, so to have that kind of connection, that it truly is unique, and it is admirable. Like, you know, everybody has those family relations that they look at and they think, well, I wish I got along, you know, when you really think about it, you wish you got along with your siblings, your parents, whatever, better. And so to basically have you guys in as an example, whether it's fucking surface or not, you know, it still exists. Not saying it is, you know, but it exists. And then, like you mentioned, you know, you don't, it's not just filled with stories about living on the streets and tough living. We've all read a lot of those books, and that's not relatable for most of us. I grew up in the suburbs, you know what I mean? And I think most people who listen, who get into this music, not most, but, you know, a fucking huge majority of it come from the same thing. So to have something more relatable.
That's the reason I think people are connecting with it, because most of us come from, you know, middle-class families. Everyone works hard. The families, you know, sort of stays together or whatever. You know, not everyone is from the streets.
Right, yeah, yeah. I'm lying if I say I could relate to any of that. You know, I lived in Baltimore for like 7 years. That's all I got. You know, that's as close as I get to. Yeah.
That's pretty dangerous, man.
It's not that bad. It's not when you live in the white trash neighborhoods. It's just hilarious.
Well, I mean, you know, I love those books. I love John's book, and Roger's book is great too.
Yeah,
but. You know, I never wanted to live in a squat. We had a chance to go hang out in squats. Yeah, I've hung out in squats, but I just never had the desire. I was like, I got a job. I'm going to rent an apartment, you know? But I understand, you know, some people, it's their way of, you know, free living, or, hey, I didn't get to live in Manhattan, that's for sure.
Right. Well, shit, I'm a millennial. I have no idea what a fucking squat even looks like, you know? What's a squat to me? That's weak Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. So you mentioned like a lot of these stories, and a lot of them are funny, and a lot of them involve, you know, silly fights. Well, at least, you know, I find some time to be silly. But how do you keep all this together? Like, I got to give you. I think you guys mentioned, at least one of you, that you haven't drank for a while, so I'm sure that helps. But if I try to think about like memories from 10 years ago at a hardcore show, they all kind of go together. But when you guys were going on and on about this tour and then that tour and then this show and that show, was there a lot of bouncing it off each other? Or like, wait, was that this time or was that something else?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we help each other remember, you know?
And also sometimes, like, I would remember something and people would be like, no, that wasn't that time. It was like, that was at this show. And I'd be like, oh, okay. You know who's good at stuff like that? And I always say this, not really, people think I'm just giving lip service or joking. I hope this book does well enough that they approach Craig and Armand to write their book and have us guests in it. You know, like we had them on this, because I want to see their takes of some of the shows that we did, or even the different angles that they came at. And Armand, he is such, at least before all his love of beer, he knew every show and what you played, you know, where it was, when we played it. You know, 90% of the time he remembers the set. You know, it's like Fat Mike is like that too, from NoFX.
Yeah.
I remember talking to him about, you know, I said to him once, remember the first time I ever met you was in some records in New York? He goes, yes, and you guys were going to go see the Cro-Mags play instead of us. I go, yes. And he knew exactly what I was talking about.
That's in the book, yeah.
It was like 1986. Yeah.
That's funny. And you know, it's I read the book right after actually listening to Craig and Armand do Wisdom and Chains podcast with Richie and with Richie and Joe. So I've been flooded by Sick of It All stuff lately. But yeah, I would love to read a book by those two. Yeah.
Yeah, I really want him to make one. I'm trying to convince Howie to talk to him about it.
Well, so when you like you had those two jump in and say, you know, give parts. You had a lot of other people, of course, too. Was there any skepticism from other people to get them to be included in this, or was everybody kind of up for it?
I think everyone was ready. You know.
Yeah, there was. It sucks because now that I remember being asked, who should we talk to? And we would just throw out names. Of course, you know, Howie had his ideas. He wanted to talk to Gary Hope because Exodus gave us our first run, which
right.
was 8 shows on the East Coast. That was the first outside of hardcore. That was the first thing we ever did. So he talked to Gary. He wanted to talk to, you know, the DRI guys. And but now, as soon as he asked us, who else should we speak to? He threw out a couple of names. But now the book's out, I'm like, you know, oh my God, we never spoke to like Chrissy Yanu, who was our publicist in England, who became our booking agent in England. And we all agree that if it wasn't for her, we would not be as big as we are in England now.
Right.
You know, she had this way with, you know, she had the ins with these magazines that were all metal. And she'd be like, why still, you know, that's great, but you can do another story on Anthrax when look at this band, Sick of It All. You know, look what they're doing in Germany. Look what they did in New York City. And all of a sudden, we'd be in fucking Kerrang and Q and all these fancy magazines, you know? Yeah. So that's another person we should have had spoke to. But you can't have everybody, I guess. That's for the Craig and Armine book.
They can get the leftovers.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I know what you
have
mean.
A lot of crazy adventures in England.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we had, and it's funny because I'm trying to, I haven't gone through the whole book again since we proofread it.
Uh-huh.
But I'm trying to remember if we've mentioned any of the England stories that we have, you know?
There was a couple mentions of the underworld, but I don't know if like off the top of my head, I can't think of anything in particular, but yeah, it's certainly in there.
Just cause but it just said that we should have had Chrissy interviewed. She was a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Were there going back and forth, were there, I mean, I'm sure, but were there things that people said were like, fuck no, we're not putting that in there?
No. I don't think so.
Luckily everybody...
Everybody kept it clean. They knew, yeah, everybody knows. Yeah. Well, so...
Yeah, that's for later. That's the later years. When we're not playing anymore, then it's going to be like the true hardcore story.
Here's what really happened.
The true story of New York hardcore.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, speaking of, like, you mentioned some things in here about people's misconceptions about Sick of It All, maybe as a band, maybe songs, maybe whatever. To take a look around, being one of them. So there's those like, negative misconceptions that people had that they got wrong. But what are some of the what is like a positive misconception? Like, what's your favorite ridiculous thing that people have made up about Sick of It All?
Oh God! Let's see. I don't know. One time when we were on tour with Sepultura and Napalm Death, I think it was in New Mexico, and they were handing out. There was a church group handing out flyers with it said "Sick of It All's" lyrics, and it was completely not our stuff. And it was all about Satan and devil worshiping. And I really wish I kept that thing. I didn't keep it.
Yeah.
But it was pretty funny.
It was like a form letter.
Yeah.
They had the form and it would say, don't listen to, and it would have like a blank spot and you could see they typed in Sick of It All. You know, they promote Satanism, drug use, promiscuous sex. You know, we were all like, yeah, sure. That's what all our lyrics are about.
I don't think you guys even hit one of those things. Yell,
we would be making more money if we could sing about that stuff.
Yeah. That's for sure. I mean, you got to, like you mentioned, the tours with Napalm Death and Sepultura. You did the one with Exodus, and I know there was obviously at the time crossover, but it really seems like you guys have embraced crossing over in every direction. Like every time people talk about crossover. We all know the term crossover, what we're referring to. But then it never goes like the other way. They never crossover is not considered like the hardcore that leans way more to the punk side or that's willing to go play Warped Tour whatever. But you guys have always been open to that, and it's clearly been to your advantage. Why do you think more bands don't take this?
A lot of bands ask us too. They always ask, well, how did you guys get so big in this area? It's like we're open for anything, we'll play pretty much with anybody.
I think now, well, not even now, but even going back 10 years ago, the other bands started to do it, like Agnostic Front realized, we had a good crossover career towards the metal, but we have a hardcore punk following. And so, and I think also Roger's other band, the Disasters, who do those Epitaph punk tours, I don't remember the names of the tours, but it was like Epitaph Punk Volume Number 3 or whatever, and it would be like them and the U.S. Bombs. And I think a lot of those bands were expressing, and Rancid, would express their love for Agnostic Front and Sick of It All. And luckily, we got the, we were the band that, like, I remember one year we went on a short run with Rancid and then right into a tour with Helmet, There's not many other bands I can say, they just toured with, these more pop punk kind of a band, and then touring with Helmet. We did one time when the Mighty Boss Tone came to New York. This is after the Warped Tour we did together. They were playing a show in the Roseland on Halloween, and one of the bands dropped out, and they added us. They called us up and asked us if we would play, and we didn't fit the bill at all. But it was a fucking amazing show, and that ended up us doing a couple of more shows with them. It was just a lot of open-mindedness, and us being open-minded to that, there were chances we got, some we didn't take. I remember Face to Face, when they were at their height, was going to do a West Coast tour, and they invited us to do it because they loved Scratch the Surface. And that's just the beauty of it, is that here's these guys, very melodic, a little aggression, but they loved our album, so they invited us to do the tour. We didn't get to do it because Pete had a hernia, so we had to cancel all the tours, but
way to go, Pete.
It was just cool that we got invited for something like that,
No, that's,
I think there's a stigma. Hardcore, I don't know, it went from this, when we got into it, it was very open-minded, to then it's this, and then that broke down into sections where, okay, here's negative hate core and here's the straight edge positive core, who like it will only tour with other positive bands, they only toured with, it was only Youth of Today, Gorilla Biscuits, and Side by Side. They would never play like Youth of Today and Sheer Terror together, that was stupid in our eyes. We were friends with all those people.
and the funny thing is that's the way most people listen to hardcore. I mean, I know there's definitely people that do that, but for the majority, I love it all. Heavy, melodic, whatever. It's all part of it. And I don't like all of it. I like all parts of each thing. Certain bands from each thing, and it makes but I don't know. It's a weird thing. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say what you were saying. It's true. It's like, you can, all right, you have Youth of Today, and then you have another band. It's not, how many Youth of Today clones are you gonna, unless like the fifth one down the line puts such a spin on it, you're like, holy shit, it sounds fresh again,
Right.
It's the same thing with the Madball clones. You got Madball, then you have Terror, then you have this whole army of clones, and it's like boring until you get to like, number 17, who does just does their own thing. Then you're like, holy shit, it sounds totally new again, I mean, I think Madball did that themselves, especially on the last album, how they reinvented their whole shit. They're still Madball, it's still influential, but it's got a whole different sound now.
Yeah, and I think you guys, I think you can say the same for Sick of It All. I think you guys have done that a couple times, and we've seen, but you've done it, you've done it in a way that's subtle but necessary, I guess. But also it's
exactly.
Yeah, you've seen other bands do it where there's big jumps from record to record, and like okay, look at a band you mentioned before, Agnostic Front. I literally love every Agnostic Front record. That's not an exaggeration. Some more than others, but I love them all. But there's like four different sounds to Agnostic Front, right? You had, you know, the early stuff, the crossover. You had the punk stuff, and you had the we're gonna put breakdowns and stuff. You know, like it's all over. But Sick of It All, you guys have this I don't know how to, this consistency and that's unmatched.
Yeah,
in hardcore.
That's just the way we write, you know. We don't write to, you know, be different every record. We just, whatever comes out, comes out.
And it's in that simplicity of, you know, it's going to sound like us no matter what, you know.
Right.
It's not like, you know, Armand and Pete go back and they're like, yeah, I really want to make a song like AC/DC, you know. Even if we did that, it would sound like Sick of It All, you know. But it's a subconscious thing of like, oh, we're writing another Sick of It All album. We take the bare bones that we love, and how can we make this interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Just keep it fresh, and that's what happens. And it's also inspiration from, like, different generations of bands. Like, you could go back to the after Scratch the Surface and going into Built to Last was actually that was more influenced by just the people that we had met, because we had toured so hard and so long on Scratch the Surface that if you... A lot of people hear that album, this is when you got this guy started to get more, you know, melody in there, more punk. It was like, no, it was always there. And it always depends on what your first two songs are on a record, because you can listen to Call to Arms and everybody says, oh, that's when you went punk again. And it's like, no, if you go down on Call to Arms, there's some heavy ass songs.
Yeah.
You just heard the first two and were like, oh, they're punk, you know?
Or they just heard someone say that and then they said it.
Yeah,
that's probably more often than not. Someone just says a tag.
Yeah, musically, like in a, you know, we would get inspired by bands as in like, holy shit, look at what Snapcase is doing. But they bring it. But we never sat down and wrote an album like Snapcase. We were like, that made us want to write the best Sick of It All record we could ever write. And that happens, you know, it doesn't have to be a new band. Again, I won't bring them up again. But like when we were writing for the last album, Wake the Sleeping Dragon, that's when Madball's Rev Up had just come out after right as we were recording. And we were like, this is so good, we have to make this the best Sick of It All record we can. And in my opinion, I think everybody really stepped up. Pete and Craig stepped up, not only in the music, but also in their lyrical writing. Me and Armine always wrote lyrics.
Yeah.
But Pete and Craig really stepped up on this album, and it shows, you know? And I think it also credits the producer, our friend Jerry Farley, for cracking the whip on Craig lyrically.
What does that mean? How did he do that?
It was good. Okay, Craig will come in with a song and just throw it at us and let us try to muddle through it, you know, and figure out what to do. He came in with some really good songs, and especially Inner Vision was amazing. Like, when I heard the music, I was like, this is the opening track. And even Jerry said, like, let's see what he does with the lyrics. And I said, I could write to it. But he goes, no, I want Craig to write this, because listen to this melody. This is something in his head that he's got to get out. And Craig didn't want to write. So Jerry said, you have to fucking write this song. And made him write the song. Came out great. You know, it's probably my favorite song off the last album.
That's hey, whatever works, man. That's funny. That's a whole
exactly.
New process. So you guys mentioned something in the book that about, well, this is kind of a negative thing, but I want to ask about it. You mentioned the United Blood set you played a few years back, and I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I wasn't there, but I was the next night, I think, when you played in Frederick, Maryland. I think that's where you were at the next night, and you mentioned this whole thing from the stage.
What show was this?
This was
I know what you're talking about. The United Blood Fest in Virginia.
Okay.
Well, that's what my question was going to be. Why did that moment stick out to you? Why do you think that one is something you remember?
It was one of those things where it's called United Blood, total old school name. The guys who run it were really old school, loved it. But it kind of hurt that we're sitting there watching the bands going before us, and I can't remember, I think it was Take Offense, Turnstile, and somebody else in Bane and us. And we went down to watch, I'd never seen Take Offense. I'd never seen Turnstile at that point. Mm-hmm. And I blown away, amazing. But all those bands, every band gave a great set. And us and the guys from Bane were all like, these kids, look at these. There's so many young kids, and they love this old school sound. You know, Take Offense is like suicidal.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And they all had an old school approach, but they made it their own. We were like, this is going to be a great show. Then we go down when Bane is on, more than half the crowd is gone already. And we were just sitting there like, what the fuck happened? And then when we went down, there was even less people there. And it was just something that stuck in my head. It was like, why wouldn't these kids sit or stick around to see the bands that influenced the bands that they just saw? And it was, it's sour grapes, I guess you could say. But I couldn't believe it. Because even when I'd go to see shows in the one I always bring up is, it was the Exploited, Zero Boys, Raw Deal, and Slapshot. Raw Deal and Slapshot were relatively newer bands at the time.
Yeah.
And there was all young kids there. Us young kids were there to see our friends, Raw Deal and Slapshot. Zero Boys were okay, but we all stuck around for the Exploited, and you were so glad you did because it was such chaos, such insanity on stage and off stage. It was amazing. But I was really kind of perturbed, and I was like, what, did everybody's moms come to pick them up at once? And people, But it was, the promoters were like, it doesn't matter, we're still here. And I was like, it kind of matters. It kind of hurt my feelings, Like I said, it could be sour grapes, but I was just so excited watching these kids lose their shit to bands that were heavily influenced by our generation. And then we go down to play and they're fucking gone, But whatever. Now it's whatever.
Yeah, no. And it's funny because, I've seen the... But also, it brings to me the question, where are the people that go to... Like, I remember a tour, I'm sure you did several, or a couple at least, a tour you guys and Bane playing, the Audubon in Baltimore. And they're, it's obviously a smaller club, but everybody's there for that. Where are those people that should have been there for that, myself included, because I wasn't there either. But it's just a, it's a... Yeah.
Well, I wish I wasn't there. That's the thing.
I mean, Pete knows this because we discuss it all the time. I mean, and I'm not saying just recently. This is going back maybe 15 years of us sitting there going, how do we keep younger kids coming to our shows? For some reason, the rest of the world, like Europe, South America, it's a no-brainer. They just come. They're like, oh, okay, my older brother, or now they're like, my parents love this band. They're going to take me to this band. And they're blown away by it. But here in the States, it was just, for, like I said, the last 15 years, we've been asking ourselves, how can we get this new generation to really like us? I don't see why kids who like those bands can sit there and put on, Wake the Sleeping Dragon and be like, this is okay. That's fucking pure fire, that album. But I'm just saying that, But I've lost track of train of thought, but like I was saying, it's like... We'd go to Europe and it's just, we'd have these generations follow us, parents coming with their older brothers, bringing their younger siblings. And then it goes from that to bringing their kids. And that's something that I know people do try to do in the States. And I understand young kids, they want their own form of rebellion. They don't want, that's why some punk kids, kids of punk parents, they're just totally into hip hop because that's their new, their new rebellion. It's not something their parents had,
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. My stepdaughter's 13 and she's starting to go recently there was a Nirvana shirt. Then she was asking to use my skateboard and it's like, all right, I don't want to influence though. I just want to see, I just want to let it go. I want to see what happens. Yeah. And it's,
Well, exactly. Yeah.
But okay. So I know
it goes to
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so I was going to say...
I was going to say that...
So I think we got a delay that we keep talking over each other.
Oh, all right. Well, I was going to say it. I mean, like Pete's daughter and my daughter, they're what are they, Pete? Like a little over a year apart or a little less, whatever.
Yeah, something and, like that.
They both like similar music, but my daughter now is getting more into like influenced by things like TikTok and stuff like that. She's getting more into dance music and musicals. So, you know, she's not that much into the core anymore. She loves going on tour with me and she loves like watching the live shows, but it's not like she's coming home putting on, you know, Victim in Pain and moshing around the living room.
I don't know, that might be a little alarming. So I know there was one part in your book that I read that I was surprised by. Because earlier in the book you mentioned how much you guys liked Kiss, right? And but then later you talked about when you were recording Built to Last, how you had the opportunity to open for Kiss at Madison Square Garden and you didn't do it.
Well,
yeah.
All right, so.
Yeah, so how does that happen?
You have to, if you're going to play there, you have to pay, there was some kind of fee for the union. This is what I was told. It might not be the exact thing, but it was like 10,000 plus.
Jesus.
That you had to pay some sort of union bullshit. And we were like, fuck that. We're going to pay, you know, 100 times the amount we're getting paid to play in front of empty seats. So we're like, fuck that.
Yeah,
so we didn't do it.
I remember we were discussing with the label for a little more time to record, and they said flat out no.
Yeah.
But when they heard about Kiss wanting us to play, they didn't want to think. They said to somebody in their on whatever their company, they said, we want the hot young bands in New York to open up every night. So they got, you know, Degeneration, and I forget who else was on there, but we were picked for one night and we had to turn it down because we said to the label, we're like, you won't give us, you know, like $3,000 more to for a little extension on the record, but you're willing to pay for our flights, pay that fee to get us on that stage, to have us yell at Kiss fans for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it kind of sucks. I think we were just, you know, we felt slighted by the label more so than excited about playing with Kiss.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense.
I don't know if we tell the story in the book, but the guys from Civ played in our place and they said that as soon as the set was over, somebody from the Kiss's crew came down and said, oh, you guys had a good time, as they were loading their stuff in their van. And they were like, yeah, we can't wait to see the show. And the guy goes over and takes all their backstage passes off and goes, well, you better go buy a ticket.
Holy shit.
Two of the guys from Civ were standing behind the guy who was peeling off the things. And when he said, you better go buy a ticket, they turned and ran into the crowd with their passes so they didn't get thrown out.
That's funny.
Which is very nice people. Very nice people they are.
But when you're bands at that level don't have guest lists, I found that out.
Yeah.
Some of the crews can get people in. Some guy who came to see us play in Buffalo, he was on tour with AC/DC when Axl Rose was singing. And then he said to me, you want to come see the band? He got me working passes for me and my wife. And we went in through we had to go in through the employees entrance and all that stuff. And we had to find a place to stand where, you know, nobody would be like, hey, what are you doing here? To watch the show.
That's ridiculous.
Those big bands don't have guest lists. Yeah. Well, it's a corporation. It's not, you know.
That's true. Well, hey, if that was Sick of It All in the Civs band situation there, and the guy was taking passes, which two would have ran away from Sick of It All with your passes back into the crowd?
I would have ran. Well, seeing as I'm the singer and I'm too lazy, or I mean, I'm too important to touch equipment, I would have been in the crowd already.
That's the great deal.
I would have just went home. Fuck that.
All right, so I won't keep you too much longer here, but I want to get back to a little bit of the book. The book, like we said, it's all these funny stories, these great tour stories, history of the band. But then at the end, it takes more of a personal turn, and honestly, it caught me off guard. The stuff with Lou's godson, the stuff with your mother's cancer diagnosis, was all this an easy thing to decide to include in the story of Sick of It All, or is it more just the story, you know, but to be cohesive in the story of the Kohler brothers.
Yeah, I think it's more just us two, right?
Yeah, it's part of our lives. You know, everything wasn't, you know, peachy keen the whole time. You know, shit happens.
Yeah,
just awful things happen.
Yeah, and you know, just shows you trying to make your way through it. You know, how to keep going.
Well, I enjoyed it for the personal touch of the whole thing. You know, I thought I was very very caught off guard by it, but I thought it really really ended it well. And I guess that's not the very ending, because you guys had your daughters included there at the end too. And as a father of two daughters, I found that really endearing.
Yeah, that was cool. Idea. That was Howie's idea. I thought that was great.
Nah, it's good.
Talk.
So, with the book's out now, right? Did this kind of work out for you guys with coronavirus? Nobody has anywhere to go, so now you can read a book. Is this the one thing that might have gone well for sake of it all with coronavirus?
No, I never thought of that, but you're right. Hopefully,
I'd much rather be playing shows than being on tour, though.
I'm sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, is there anything?
I mean, we all miss it.
Are you able to, as sick of it all, been able to do anything through this? Are you guys able to write? Are you, you know, is there any band business that you're able to actually go through with?
We're doing stuff, but it seems to be taking forever. I see other bands turning shit around like, you know, in no time. But
a few days they get shit out, and we're like, it's been what? How long it's been since we did those songs?
We finished. We did an experiment.
3 months.
Six songs, and we've been done for 3 months now. And it's like, oh, it was in the hand of the guy who's mixing the music. Oh, it's in the hand of the guy editing the shots together. And then it's like, well, we have to wait to talk to the label. It's like, why are you talking to the label? What the fuck are you talking to the label for? they're not helping us out. They didn't pay for anything.
what the fuck? Just wanted to put it out.
Label's got to be...
But that, you know, yeah, they have. Hopefully, they're going to help promote it. Our manager doesn't do things stupidly. He's trying to do it where he can get the most from everybody, you know, who's involved.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of live shows and stuff, it's so strange. There's a photographer friend of ours from Europe, and he posted this thing. He said, "So happy from last. Got to see this last weekend." And I'm looking at it, I'm like, this must be a print from last year. No, they had a live actual mini festival in Germany, and it made no sense to me. All they did was push the barricade further away from the stage. So you had the stage, then a big space, then bouncers, then a big space, then the barricade. And then the shots that he has of the crowd is like a regular hardcore crowd. It's people diving on each other. There's a one shot of everybody holding this guy up on the crowd, and other people are jumping off the barricade. And I'm like,
it's crazy.
They can do this, but we can't tour? What the hell's going on?
Hey, did you see that thing Craig sent about New York State is, for I don't know how long, but banning any place that has alcohol to have music, any live music.
Live bands. Yeah, what? No more live bands.
Why does that doesn't even make sense.
None of this is crazy.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Well, given the opportunity, if you had the opportunity now to play, where do you guys stand on that? Would Sick of It All be out there playing right now if you could? Given if nothing was different,
I don't know.
If there was still, you know, it would have to be where we would have to tour, and then have to have some place where before we get back to our families, we have to sit with each other for 2 weeks doing nothing.
It might be the end of the band.
And then go to our families. That I was just going to say, maybe they could put us in that in our old van, the shitbox, for 2 weeks, and we could just sit in there, quarantine there together.
Well, there you go. You brought it back to a point.
Shitbox was in the book.
Yeah, you brought it back to a point from the book. So I think that's a good place to end things here. But guys, thank you very much for doing this, cool. For having this conversation. I really do appreciate it. Big fan of the band.
No,
and the book's great too. I don't know what you guys have heard.
Thank you.
But I've heard only good things.
Well, good. I hope spread the word then.
We will. That's what this is about.
Everybody's like.
All right, fellas.
Thank you.
Thanks for the conversation.
All right.
All right. Later.
Thanks, man. Yep. Talk to you later.
Bye.
See you, Luke.
See you.
I said, shut up.
we had. Whoa! Wanna get paid, wanna get bald. This man watches over you. Where do you go? What will you do? Your mind is racing in a million directions. All in one. Where will you turn? You're not in this all alone. Just look around and you'll see the absolute right before your eyes. I'm here for you and you for me.
So there you have it. That's my conversation with Pete and Lou of Sick of It All. Truly an honor to have them. Go check out their book, The Blood and the Sweat. You got nothing else to do. You're not going anywhere else. The government is making sure of that. And I don't know if you agree with that or not. And hold on a second. Don't tell me because I don't care. Keep it to yourself, you fucking jackass. okay, so if you're new to the podcast, thank you for listening. I hope you'll stick around for some upcoming episodes. I'm all over the place. We got hardcore, we got heavy metal, we got punk rock, sometimes, rarely. We got some noise rock. We got some industrial coming up. Next week's episode is with Stan from Terminal Nation. If you're not familiar with Terminal Nation, they're a very cool band out of Arkansas. Little hardcore punk, grindcore. No, it's not grindcore. I don't know what the fuck you call it. Their new record, it's out on 20 bucks spin. Okay, so that should give you a little bit of an indication of what they sound like, but it's more on the hardcore side. Anyway, you're going to hear that next week. That was a cool chat, too. So, things are going great here for the podcast, although the website's still not up, but we're going to get that fucking website up. I'm told by the end of the month, remains to be seen, but I am ever hopeful that you will be able to go to gettingitout.net here in the near future and see what we've been working on for a year. Not quite a year, but I'm going to exaggerate and say a year. Until then, go to @getting_out_podcast_ No, there's no underscore at the end. @getting_it_out_podcast That's the Instagram page. And facebook.com/gettingitoutpodcast There's also the Twitter @gettingitoutpod Follow those things. Look for what's coming. It should be a lot. It might be a little. Depends on the week. You know, who knows? Life is crazy right now. It's all sorts of things, and I think the easiest thing to do is just call it crazy. All right, that's going to be it for this week. I'm going to end this one with a song from what should I go? Should I go well known or not well known? Let's go with the one that's not so well known. I'm going to end this with a song from Cryptwalk. They're from Australia. They're a grindcore band. The song's called Breeding Filth. It'll be out later this year, or later this month, and you should check them out, especially if you like grindcore, right? It's a quick one, so thank you for listening. Hope you'll come back next week, and that's it. Bye-bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.